Jeff, you may start.
Good, thanks. This is court number 19-00192, Invenergies Renewable LLC et al. Versus the United States et al. The Honorable Gary S. Katzman presiding. Will the attorneys please state their names for the record, starting with the plaintiffs?
This is John Brew, Larry Eisenstadt, and Amanda Berman for Plaintiffs Invenergy and Plaintiffs Intervenors AES and Clearway.
Hello, Your Honor. Matt Nicely here with Akin Gump on behalf of SEIA, Solar Energy Industries Association, and with me today is also Nate Witkowski.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. This is Kevin O'Brien at Baker & McKenzie, representing EDF Renewables, Inc.
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. Justice, and I represent the United States. The line is Tara Hogan, Department of Justice.
Good morning, Your Honor. This is Diana Quaya with Aaron Fox, representing defendant intervenors Hanwha Qcells USA Inc. and Oxen Solar. On the phone is my colleague John Gurley. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, good afternoon, everybody. Jeff, do we advise people to mute themselves when they're not talking?
Yes, we went over that, Your Honor.
Right, because I hear static.
Yep. Yes, if everyone can keep their microphones muted except when they're speaking, that'll really help us in cutting down on the background noise.
Good afternoon, counsel. I'm very sorry that there was a hiccup, but it seems that we have this resolved and looking forward to our conference this afternoon on Invenergy Renewables et al. Versus United States et al. And as everyone here knows, on October 12th, the defendants submitted and filed a status report in which it was indicated that on October 10th, 2020, the president had signed a proclamation to further facilitate positive adjustment to competition from imports of certain photovoltaic cells. And the order by presidential proclamation becomes effective on October 25th, 2020. And the order states that the exclusion of bifacial panels from application of the safeguard tariff has impaired and is likely to continue to impair the effectiveness, and that in light of increased imports of competing products, such exclusion entails, that it is necessary to revoke the exclusion and apply the safeguard tariff to bifacial panels, and B, that the presidential proclamation states that the exclusion of bifacial panels from application to safeguard tariffs has impaired the effectiveness of the four-year tariff of the action proclaimed rather in proclamation 9693. And that to achieve the full remedial effect envisaged for that action, it is necessary to adjust the duty rate of the safeguard tariffs for the fourth year of the safeguard measure to 18%. This, of course, is the most recent series of filings in the Invenergy Renewables case, which has certainly become well known to the court and to everybody in this virtual gathering. And in response to the status report of October 12th, the plaintiffs have responded, and and requested that a status conference be held by the court. The plaintiffs, one of the plaintiffs, Invenergy, over the weekend responded to the defendant's status report with a proposed second supplemental complaint with an accompanying memorandum, also indicating that the other plaintiffs will be filing their own proposed second supplemental complaints, and also indicating that there is an intention to file a motion to enjoin the presidential proclamation, which is set to become effective on October 25th, which is actually a Sunday. And the court has been informed that there will be filings in the nature of motions for a temporary restraining order, and also for a preliminary injunction. As we speak, the court has not seen any of those filings. The hope is with this conference is to just get a sense of where we are in this litigation. The plaintiffs in Invenergy, in its filing, has contended that a second supplemental complaint, and it made a motion with the court for a second supplemental complaint is appropriate. And one of the reasons given is that the presidential proclamation, insofar as it would exclude the bifacial panels from the safeguard duties, would, in the plaintiff's view, run counter to the various opinions of this court on that, on the question of exclusion. Of course, this court's most recent opinion was issued on Thursday, October 15th. So there are a number of matters that need to be discussed in terms of scheduling. The proclamation becomes effective, as indicated, on October 25th. The court is very interested in the sense of the counsel as to what the next steps are, what the timing is. I have to say that I'm also wondering when the court would be seeing the further filings with respect to the motion for TRO and preliminary injunction. And because it's not only the court that will be seeing it, but it will also be, of course, the government. And we're operating under a very tight timeline. And I'm wondering actually why the filings haven't arrived by this date, because October 25th is almost here. And of course the court would need to evaluate the various filings. The government would of course need the opportunity to respond to those filings. So why don't we begin with the plaintiff? Of course, there are several of you here, plaintiffs, plaintiff interveners. You know, I'm not sure sort of whether you've determined whether you would have a principal spokesperson, but perhaps we should start with plaintiff Invenergy. Counsel?
Yes, Your Honor. This is John Brew for plaintiff Invenergy. I'll be taking the lead on today's status call. Thank you for the time, and we appreciate you, the court, setting this up and on such quick notice. We plan to file our motion to modify the existing preliminary injunction tomorrow. And as part of that motion, if the court is unable to grant the motion within that time period, and the alternative, we'll be asking for a temporary restraining order to allow potentially the courts and parties to more fully address arguments raised. We appreciate the time constraints that have been put upon us, but really those are problems of the defendant's own making. The actual Federal Register containing the annex wasn't published until Friday, and we filed our supplemental complaints on Saturday, and we will plan to file this motion to modify in TRO by Tuesday. We would like resolution of an answer from the court of whether or not the president's most recent action and proclamation should be enjoined before the October 25th deadline that the government has imposed. And
when you say enjoined, you mean by TRO?
By TRO or preliminary or having the modification of the existing PI to include this facial proclamation in addition to the April withdrawal, which was issued last week in your order, the most recent preliminary injunction.
Counsel, yes, not that we're really getting into the merits, but at this point, but my interest, of course, is piqued by your reference to the provision of the statute, which is 19 U.S. Code Section 2254B1B, which allows the president to reduce, modify, or terminate Section 201 safeguards if he determines after a majority of the representatives of the domestic industry submits to the president a petition requesting such reduction, modification, or termination on such basis that the domestic industry has made a positive adjustment to import competition. Is there any case law that you can cite to which is directly on point with respect to the construction of that portion of the statute?
At this point, we haven't found any cases directly on point, but we think the terms of the statute are clear that Section 201 measures may only be phased down, not up, in accordance with Section 202. And that to the extent the president attempts or the government attempts to invoke Section 204B1B, that may only be done in a lessening measure, and it can only and the government can only reduce the impact of the Section 201 or reduce the Section 201 measures. And that is borne out by the fact that in order to do so, there must be a finding of positive adjustment, meaning they can handle imports. The domestic industry can cope with and has made positive adjustments to allow it to compete with all imports. And so there's no reason for that provision, or that provision isn't allowed to increase the tariff measures. Why would you increase tariff measures if the domestic industry has made positive adjustments to trade? That defeats the whole purpose of Section 201.
And of course, we've been presented with a TRO motion and also a preliminary injunction in this Invenergy litigation dating back to November 2019, and also December 2019. And initially, with respect to irreparable harm, the concern was an absence of process. That's a concern that's continued in some of the other matters that the court has decided. And let me say from the outset, this court has never actually had the adjudicated the merits of this case. The issues before the court up to now have really, at least from the court's perspective, been decided by questions of process. Did the government, did the United States trade representative comply with principles of administrative law in providing appropriate process? And so there was a determination of a finding of irreparable harm, certainly at the outset when there was an absence of notice and comment. What is the irreparable harm? And again, this is a preview. We're not reaching the merits, but because time is of the essence here, whatever information the court can get from counsel at this time is appreciated. What is the irreparable harm here?
So, Your Honor, I think the initial decisions were based on lack of process plus other factors, and I would, including business uncertainty, equities, the fact that we had entered into contracts which are still ongoing, that bind us to certain cost models and obligations, both in terms of paying for the imported solar panels and also solar development projects, using those panels then to develop projects which we're still contractually bound to. So those plus harms, those other irreparable harms, still exist. And we would also say the procedural harms still exist, in that we still haven't seen the petition, the petition that's been alleged to give rise to this presidential proclamation. So that to the extent that you have agencies implementing a presidential proclamation, those agencies still must follow the procedures in the APA. And we've outlined some of those in our supplemental complaints, and we'll address those also in our motion to modify and TRO tomorrow.
And of course, a question is whether this present action should be considered an independent, separate action and filed as a new case. What are your thoughts on that?
We believe that would be a waste of all parties' time and resources. We've already litigated many of these issues. We've briefed the authority issue, which is in addition to the process issue. This court's familiar with the case. All the parties are familiar with this case. To require us to file a new proceeding would be a very, very big waste of resources and in violation of CIT Rule 1. Mm-hmm.
And could you, in any event, if you filed a separate proceeding, move to consolidate the two cases?
That would be possible, but then we're still put in the position of what to do with the effective date of October 25th. How do we do this most efficiently and effectively and make sure that our harms are addressed and the equities and status quo are maintained? So while we believe that the bifacial proclamation, the most recent one, is in violation of your existing preliminary injunction, we understand that the government does intend to implement it. And that's why we're moving quickly through these proceedings in this court, rather than filing a completely separate complaint and then another motion to consolidate while the government collects duties that we believe are unlawfully imposed.
Well, thank you. Mr. Brew, is there anything else that you want to bring to the court's attention at this time?
No, aside from the timing, and we apologize for that, but like I said, that's not of our doing. This is on a very, very tight timeline based on the government's action. And we would just note the case cited in your most recent opinion, the Amato case, that gives this court broad equitable authority to modify injunctions, particularly under circumstances where it is done to preserve status quo, while modifications affecting that injunction are under advisement. So this, that to me fits squarely in the case where we are now, why it's most efficient to just supplement the complaints and address the scope of the preliminary injunction and modify it as necessary to ensure that the most recent action and attempt to impose duties on bifacial solar panels is enjoined until this court can make a final decision on the merits.
So just to reiterate, tomorrow, tell me what you expect you'll be filing.
We'll be filing a motion to modify the existing preliminary injunction and a request for a temporary restraining order in the alternative in case the court and parties don't have enough time to fully consider that modification, to allow parties briefing and argument as necessary. And I would also just note the other potential alternative is to allow more time for parties to brief in the court to address this. The government could extend the implementation date from October 25th to a later date, as it did in the initial action, extending it from October 31st to November 8th, for example. So that's another way that we could resolve some of these time constraints that we're under now.
Mm-hmm. Have you, if I might ask, have you, without asking for any answers, but have you been in contact with the government?
I've spoken with Mr. Ticini briefly. I haven't recommended that solution. I was just trying to understand the government's intent on implementing and enforcing the presidential proclamation.
Right. Well, you can be sure we'll be asking Mr. Ticini for his thoughts.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brew. Do the attorneys for the interveners wish to say anything? Plaintiff interveners?
Your Honor, Matt Geisley here. I would only add that we also did file our supplemental complaint today. And I believe I won't speak for Mr. O'Brien, but I think believe they're planning to do the same. So ours also have been filed. What we file tomorrow, what Mr. Brew talked about us filing tomorrow, will be a joint filing on behalf of all plaintiffs and plaintiff intervener.
Very good. And
Your Honor, yeah, for EDF, yes, we've already filed the same supplemental complaint.
The supplemental complaints filed today must be hot off the presses. But are they? Do they track largely the supplemental, the second supplemental complaint as presented by Plaintiff in Benergy?
Yes, they do, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay.
Yes, for the most part, Your Honor. This is Matt Nicely. For the most part, they do track. We've included in ours an additional issue of addressing not merely what the president did with regard to the bifacial panel exclusion, but also the change in the step down in the overall tariff, from moving it from 15 to 18 for the fourth year. So that's incorporated into our supplemental as well.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Nicely. And I think we can now hear from the government. Mr. Ticini, I must say, Mr. Ticini?
Yes, Your Honor.
By the way, I see that you have a new background. my law clerks and I were wondering what your background would look like.
It's pretty busy. So, you know, basically the matter at hand right now is scheduling. Plaintiffs have the right to challenge the president's determination and have their day in court. And we expect the court to address that under the standards set forth in Silfab Solar by the Federal Circuit in the initial challenge to the 201 determination. Anything that the USTR did, the October withdrawal, the April withdrawal, come Sunday, that's all going to be moot. We would defer to the court as to whether to supplement the complaint if it meets the standards set forth in Rule 15D and then this court's earlier decision granting the first supplementation. So long as really the complaint recognizes that the only operative action that alters the legal relationship of the parties come the 25th of October is the president's 204 determination.
We are real, of course, and I know we're not getting into the merits, but again, because time is of the essence, it is helpful to have this conversation. Of course, the plaintiffs contend, and the plaintiffs intervener contend, that the president's proclamation, most recent proclamation, due to become effective on October 25th, is in violation of this court's prior opinions.
Right.
I don't express a view on that. I'm interested in your view.
Well, there's a couple reasons why that argument's wrong. And, you know, basically from reviewing the statute, we'll provide something in much more detail in writing. But if you look at paragraph one, subparagraph A and B, well, first looking at subparagraph B, the plaintiffs basically contend that the words reduction, modification, or termination really mean reduction or termination. So they write the word modification entirely out of the statute. Then they make an argument that the gist of it is, well, if there is a positive adjustment to import, has made a positive adjustment to import competition, then as a corollary to that, there can only be reductions. And that doesn't make sense either, because the industry might be making a positive adjustment to import competition as a whole, or for, but it might not be making that adjustment as quickly as needed to basically save the industry from the dire circumstances that the safeguard was designed to prevent, or parts of the industry might be improving faster than other parts of the industry. So the plaintiffs leave a huge hole in the statute by assuming that the determination, the positive adjustment determination, is entirely binary. There have been some good things that have come out of the safeguard for the domestic solar industry, but there are still problems with it. And the president clearly has the authority under subparagraph B to modify the Solar 201 by re-including bifacial products, and for that matter, by increasing the rate of duty to 18%.
Mm-hmm. What kind of record do you contemplate, or what sort of attachments or whatever will accompany your filing?
Well, first we'd have to respond to the plaintiffs. I believe that when you're challenging a presidential determination, and that's all that's left, is whether the president's determination was lawful. That's the only issue that will be left come Sunday. It's the determination itself, given the very deferential standard of review under George S. Bush. The findings of fact and motivations for the president's determinations are not subject to review. The court in SILFAB provided a very long and detailed analysis of all of these authorities going back almost a century. So the court looks at the president's determination and determines whether there was a clear statutory violation or a significant procedural violation by the president. Not by the ITC, not by USTR, by the president. And the scope of review is the president's determination itself.
So, with respect to procedural deficiency, if, for example, there was not notice and comment, by the USTR, that would not, in your view, that would not preclude the president from making his determinations?
That's absolutely true. And the Supreme Court's decision in Vermont Yankee really is the foundation on which the court should look at any procedural issues here, and in conjunction with Franklin v. Mass. I mean, under Franklin v. Mass, the president is not an agency. His actions are not subject to APA review, whether that be treating his actions as a rulemaking for procedural requirements or applying the 5 U.S.C. 706 standard review. So what happens here is you look at Vermont Yankee and say, okay, what procedures are provided by statute? In the case of the APA, there's the minimal provision of notice and comment under 5 U.S.C. 553. In the case of a presidential determination, you look at section 204 itself. And there's a proceeding before the ITC where that's provided, but there's nothing, there's no provision of any sort of notice and comment before the president. The ITC issued a report. The public was provided access to that report. And they were able to comment at the time. But there's no requirement that the president or those who are advising the president upon receipt of the ITC's report conduct any sort of second notice and comment proceeding.
So, Mr. Ticini, you've heard that plaintiff interveners will be filing a joint submission tomorrow. And of course, you haven't seen the submission yet. Do you have a timetable in mind as to when you would be responding to the plaintiff's submission?
It would take us probably until sometime next week because we have to coordinate with obviously USTR, possibly with the ITC, depending on what plaintiffs say. We don't know what they're going to say. Maybe even with the White House Counsel's Office and others in the Department of Justice will also want to take a look at this. So it's going to take, we understand that time is of the essence, but it would probably take into next week sometime. Assuming the court grants their leave to, the plaintiff's leave to supplement their complaints, which we would oppose if they included claims related to the earlier soon-to-be-moot determinations.
So where does that leave us with respect to the presidential proclamation, which declared that it would be effective October 25th, if we don't have the benefit of your response?
Well, the plaintiffs, first of all, if the plaintiffs can show harm during a short period, the plaintiffs would need to show harm during a short period where duties would be paid. They've never alleged that that there are ships on the water, that entries are going to start coming in next Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday. So we don't know whether time is really of the essence, as they allege. Invenergy, I don't even know if it can say when its importers are going to be bringing in bifacial panels. What's the date of entry? So they need to show some sort of harm. The one certain thing that I can tell the court right now is that the president already directed that the HTS has changed as of the 25th. And nobody else in the government has the authority to change that proclamation other than the president.
Now, is there any way that you and the plaintiffs can delay the October 25th effective date? I mean, you just appear to have indicated no. Short of the president changing his mind.
I will check internally, but I am very doubtful of taking action that contradicts the unambiguous directive of the president. I am doubtful that that would be authorized anywhere in the United States government.
Is there anything else that you would like to present to the court right now?
Nothing more for the government, Your Honor. We look forward to seeing the plaintiff's papers. And I guess the one thing I do want to reiterate regarding timing is that they would, if they wanted a TRO, they would need to allege and prove up immediate irreparable harm during a relatively modest period of time when the court could decide a preliminary injunction. And they would also need to demonstrate the four factors. And finally, if the court were to entertain a TRO, we would respond to that. We would respond to that much more quickly than a PI.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Ticini.
Thank you.
We'll hear from the defendant intervener.
Yes, good afternoon, Your Honor. We would like to go back to the issue of plaintiff's motion for leave to file their second supplemented complaint. And defendant interveners have a different view on this, Your Honor, because we strongly intend to oppose this motion because we believe these supplemental complaints introduce claims that represent an entirely different action. These new claims that the plaintiffs are seeking to add are of a different nature. They arise from a presidential proclamation and they seek a different relief. They seek to enjoin the enforcement of the presidential proclamation. As compared to the original action that Invenergy and the plaintiffs brought, which was an action that challenges agency actions under the APA. And also the court's rulings in this matter to this point have been, as Your Honor has indicated, on procedural grounds and on the legality of actions taken by USTR under the APA. But what we have now with the proposed amended complaint of Invenergy and the other plaintiffs is essentially an intent to transform this lawsuit from a standard APA challenge to a sweeping challenge to the president's constitutional and statutory authority under the to issue a proclamation. So they're essentially seeking a declaratory judgment that the proclamation is an unlawful modification of the safeguard. And they're also challenging the fact that application of the safeguard to bifacial products violates plaintiffs' due process rights and are unconstitutional. So, Your Honor, we would like the opportunity to, in this short period of time, to respond to these, to this motion, because we believe these should be filed as a completely separate action. And we would be ready to do so within the time frame that the court has before the 25th of October. The second point we wanted to bring to the court's attention is that the amended complaints, if they're allowed, they claim an issue of the constitutionality of the proclamation, as well as issues of importance regarding the interpretation and administration of safeguard law. These are novel issues that have not been decided by a court before and will impact a very large volume of trade and of importers. So on these grounds, we believe that it would be appropriate under CIT Rule 77E2 to have this case heard by a panel of three judges. So before we proceed deeper into the merits of this case, we would like the opportunity to file this motion for a three-judge panel, and we are prepared to do so relatively quickly. So that these claims could actually be addressed in this forum, because this is exactly the case that Rule 77E2 had in mind. You have a constitutional challenge, and you have an issue that is of great importance to the administration and interpretation of the law. And again, given the very short timeline that we have, We would also request that the court expedite any responses to a motion for a three-judge panel.
All right. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, Mr. Ticini, could I ask a question that occurs to me? Thank you, Ms. Cuella. I was wondering if I could ask Mr. Ticini a question.
Yes, Your Honor.
So, Mr. Brew, when I asked him about the timing of things, said that the government through annex only this Friday. Published the proclamation in the Federal Register. Do I have that correct?
Yeah, yes, that's correct. It takes a few days to get something published in the Federal Register.
So that's October 16th.
Published. Yes.
Right, and so I'm just trying to think of the timeline here. So we have a proclamation which is supposed to go into effect on October 25th. It's published on October 16th. And within the space of only a few days, these important questions with respect to a TRO preliminary injunction need to be decided. Just wondering about the chronology of that. If you could comment.
We provided notice to the parties in the court. Okay, the president signed the proclamation on Saturday the 10th. And then on Monday, the 12th, which is a federal holiday, we filed a status report with the court upon learning that the document was signed. So all of the parties here had actual notice through the ECF system that the president had reimposed the safeguard measure on bifacial products. And then Invenergy filed its status report on the 15th. Where it attached a copy of the draft that was put up for pre-publication review at the Federal Register. And then on the 16th, the issue of the Federal Register, that's where the proclamation was officially published. So, under the Federal Register Act, publication in the Federal Register is sufficient to provide constructive notice to anyone in the United States. It's not necessary. It's only sufficient. So the plaintiffs knew about it. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Ticini. Well, unless any counsel here has anything else that you'd like to say, I think we're going to adjourn and await the filings.
Your Honor, this is just John Brew. Just a couple points in response to the comments made. One, the authority argument and due process argument were in the original complaint. Two, in just terms of timing and process, I don't think, during these proceedings, the government has effectively conceded and stated to the court that they weren't going to change the HS or implement this until the PI was lifted. And that hasn't happened here. And it seems inappropriate to reward the defendant for their recent rash actions and burden us. And really, the court should maintain the status quo. And we'll brief that more fully in our filing tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brew. Thank you, counsel. And we'll adjourn, and please stay safe and be well. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor.